I'm Catherine Arndt, the Chief of the VLGA Connect Studio. Welcome to today's episode, brought to you by the VLGA, your councillor support network and the national broadcaster on all things local government.
Hello and welcome back to VLGA Connect. Joining me on the program today, one of our more regular guests. I'm delighted to have the Victorian Auditor General, Andrew Greaves, back with us. Hi, Andrew.
G'day, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Indeed it is. Good to catch up with you. I'm not sure if it'll be the last time, but your term is coming to an end in just a few months, isn't it?
It is indeed. So I'm not sure if it'll be the last time either. But no, I was appointed in 2016 for a seven-year term. And that's in the constitution of the state of Victoria that the Auditor General is first appointed for 7 years. There is some provision in the constitution for reappointment, but certainly not at my gift. It's at the gift of the Parliament. So we'll wait. We need to wait and see what their intention is. But you're right. It could, in fact, be my last term, my last year of my term. So this could be the last conversation or maybe the last but one, but we'll see.
Well, let's hope it's not. But if it is, thank you very much for being so accessible and for sharing your insights with us on a regular basis. And the reason we wanted to catch up is today is a little while ago now, you released your findings from the 2021-22 round of audits of local government with a few observations. Obviously, a pandemic impacted year that would be leading to some of the observations, I assume, Andrew.
Oh, look, I think so. I think we're still really feeling the long-term effect of COVID, no doubt, the pandemic. Mm. And one of the points we make, that report, first and foremost, I mean, we didn't get the report tabled until February. Mm. And there was two reasons for that. I can't table a report when Parliament doesn't sit. So with the election, we were really pushed to try and get anything out before they went into caretaker mode. But we were also delayed both in some councils trying to finalise their financial report and also my own office being able to audit those financial reports. And I feel, it's more than I feel, certainly a large contributor to that was turnover of staff both in my office and in councils, which led to some of those delays. So, yes, it's that's to me one of the biggest impacts that we saw with COVID is... and I think we're still feeling is this loss of talent from particularly the financial kind of sector, the accounting called people seem to be leaving and continue to leave, I might say.
I was going to ask that because I've heard this a few times now. So there's no sign of that issue abating at all?
No, not really. Well, not from where I stand, no. You know, they talk about the great resignation, and certainly we've experienced that within our own organisation, you know, and we're dealing with a new generation of employees too, who, as we've reflected over a number of years, have different priorities and, you know, different aims in their life. And, you know, I've just got four of my financial auditors have decided to pack up and go and live in Europe for 2 years. Wow. You know, just on a whim, you know, like let's go and do it, guys. And
That's four of how many, Andrew?
Well, I've got about 70 financial auditors,
right?
Okay. So it's not insignificant, but you know, our turnover rates in my own office have increased quite significantly from historic lows of, you know, below 15%. We're now probably up 25-30%, and you know, we did some analysis in the report that we tabled about council turnover of staff, and we saw the same thing. You know, we were talking turnover rates there back to 30 June 22 of 20%. Now, I haven't got data for this year yet, but I suspect that trend has continued. And of course, that's then very challenging for an accounting or finance area if they can't actually retain qualified accountants or attract them. To actually go ahead and then prepare a set of financial statements. And it was equally challenging for us to find the resources to audit those financial statements.
So, So you made the observation in your report that as at the end of January, there were some audits that hadn't been finalised. I think one council and a few agencies. Is that due to that availability of staff issue, or are there some other issues at play with those?
Pretty much. I mean, there's, you know, that one council, yes, it's a resourcing issue typically, because, you know, the accounting issues that arise, we kind of work proactively with councils to try and resolve them as we progress through the audit. So typically for the councils, it's about resources and their ability to actually get the resources they need to prepare a set of financial reports. The other smaller entities, it's a combination, I think, of, it is resourcing again, I think, because they're smaller entities and they don't necessarily give the priority to it that larger entities like councils can. Yeah. So that's been a feature for a while. We always try and work with all our clients in local government to get them across the line in terms of their reporting deadlines. But inevitably, one or two councils struggle. This time it was a few more. You know, I haven't got an update yet on the 23 audits as to how they're going. But as I said, I suspect councils will continue to struggle.
So some of those failed to meet legislative timelines, you say, last year. I think 10 councils didn't have it done by 31st of October. What is the upshot of not meeting those legislative timelines?
Well, I mean, from our perspective, and I'm sure from the council's perspective, it's just about transparency, isn't it? You know, and engaging with your ratepayers and residents. So, I mean, those timelines are set basically, as with the private sector and as with state government, to get your financial report out as soon as you possibly can before, after year end. We don't, you know, and there's a whole range of reasons why you'd want to do that. You don't want your finance staff working on last year's finances when you're in the middle of this year's finances. So there's a practical consideration to get it done as quickly as possible. But really, it's just about that transparent and accountability back to your ratepayers and residents, getting the financial information out as soon as practicable. But inevitably, and look, it happened in the private sector last year as well during COVID, they were given extensions to their reporting deadlines because everyone just accepted, this is going back to 30 June 21, that it was just very hard to get the resources you needed to actually produce them. So I don't see it at really as a criticism. I see it as a point in time issue associated with this resource problem that we faced and that they faced, because as I said, part of the reason some of them were delayed is I couldn't actually get the auditors to do the auditing. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of mea culpa here. It's a bit of, you know, them and us, and we need to work together. But and I guess that's where in the report we tried to signal how would we look to be more efficient in the financial reporting process. How can we produce these year-end financial reports and annual reports with the least possible resource input, you know, in the fastest possible time and in most accurately. So I'm always keen to work with every council to look at how they do their month-end close process when they close their books on a monthly basis and their year-end close process to produce their financial statements. And I know my team, you know, have given some tips and, if you like, to councils as to how they can better streamline their financial reporting process. So that's something that we'll focus on in the coming year. The other point we made in this report was that there's a model set of financial statements, which is a great thing to have for a sector, you know, because it has kind of the model disclosures and, you know, that sets out the statements that are required. We had a hard look at that last year, and we think there's probably scope there to streamline those model financial reports as well.
So those two things are the answer to an ongoing resourcing issue?
I think so, yeah. And it's a bit chicken and eggy, but, like, if you can actually build a really solid close the books, you know, process, you know, and the best practice organisations around the world, they have a monthly close process, then they build on that monthly close process so that the financial year-end close process is really just the monthly close process with a little bit more, right? If you can get into a routine and a rhythm of closing your books every month, doing your major reconciliations regularly, you know, one of the things we found this year again is that the finance areas and, say, the engineering areas weren't really talking to each other. So we come in at year end and we say, well, hang on, there's a lot of these assets are missing from your accounts. Why are they missing, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's because councils book the capital expenditure into kind of a holding account or a suspense account, a WIP account, and they only once a year try to analyse that and work out what shouldn't be there and what should be there. If they could do that maybe on a quarterly basis or a six-monthly basis, then the effort post year end is less, and there's greater chance that they're going to be more reliable throughout the year. So, but as I said, it's a bit chicken and eggy. You got to get some good resources onto this, you know, but if you do get a good month end close process going, your year end close process should be really smooth. It should be quick, and we should come in as auditors and find nothing and be able to go tick, everything's fine.
Will that also deal with this issue that you discovered of more errors in the financial reports?
Exactly. Yeah, well, as I said, I think part of the reason we find errors post 30 June is because there hasn't been a lot of work done pre 30 June. You know, so everyone's, you know, it's a really rushed time post 30 June. We've got these deadlines. If we're only just turning our attention to the year-end financial statements post 30 June, then there's a huge workload for the finance area to prepare them. And then there's a huge effort for the auditors to come in and audit, particularly if most of the adjustments and most of the balances are really substantiated post 30 June. But if we could, if councils could get into a rhythm of doing, we call them interim hard closes, like, so pick a date, the end of May or the end of April, and imagine that's the year end date, and do everything you'd normally do at year end earlier. The auditors can then come in and check that earlier. And if there are problems with your close processes, if there are problems with reconciliations, they can be identified, resolved, and then you've only got a couple of months to deal with through 30 June. So these are solutions to this problem about errors and about timeliness. But as I said, it requires a bit of upfront resource investment in that. To get that done.
Which as we've established, perhaps is not that easy for many at the moment. The quality of the local government model report you've touched on, what needs to happen to deal with that issue?
Well, I've made a recommendation to LGV, you know, and we're also mindful that, you know, you've got really active organisations like FinPro that look at this. There's a couple of things, but the first thing is, and this is what sometimes auditors lose sight of this, but quite often financial statement preparers lose sight of this, is a concept called materiality. So a general purpose financial report, the statements we put out year end, only have to be materially correct. They don't have to be 100% correct. So people confuse the idea that this is, I've got to get this right to the last dollar. Now you don't, because you're only producing information. The way we talk about material error is if I reported a number and somebody made a decision based on the number, if that number was wrong and they made the wrong decision based on that number, then that's materially incorrect.
Right.
But there's a fair scope. You know, you look at assets in local government. There's about $125 billion, I think, of infrastructure assets. How much could that number be out and yet it still would not affect the decision makers who are using those financial reports? So this is a concept of materiality. And what we found over time, and we'd looked at this at the state government as well, is quite often two things. Councils or financial report preparers are trying to get the number to the last dollar when they don't really need to, right? And then two, they're putting in extra information, particularly in note disclosures, which is not material to the users of the financial report. People do not use that immaterial information to make decisions. So most of the recommendation is about stripping out immaterial disclosures, because that just takes time, that takes effort. The auditors then have to look at it. We find problems with it. So let's avoid the problem by not even putting the disclosure there in the first place. A lot of it's about that. The other part of it is really about, and we've done this at the state government level, just reordering how the information is presented, putting the accounting policy note with the actual number in the note, so that when a reader looks at it, it's better organised, they can get the flow of the information and they can understand it without jumping from page 1 to page 10 to note 33, you know, kind of, it's about consolidating and rationalising what's in the financial report. So I think, you know, if we can get the financial statements rationalised and streamlined, if we can get the close processes on a monthly and year-end basis working more efficiently and effectively, then it'll be to everyone's advantage.
So the other side of this coin, Andrew, is the financial health and sustainability of the sector generally. What sort of conclusions are you able to draw from this last round of statements?
Well, I mean, and there's always a caveat with this, because obviously we're drawing our conclusions based on these general purpose financial reports. You know, so we're taking this information, and on the face of it, the numbers look reasonably good again this year. You know, now the operating result this year looked a bit better, but we cautioned there because we saw that instead of getting 50% prepayment of the financial assistance grant, there was a 75% prepayment. So there was a little bit of sugar sweetener in the revenue, which of course means that this year they'll lose that 25%. So, but look, expenditure, as we expected, grew, and into contractor and services area it grew. And I think that's an impact of COVID and inflation. But the operating surpluses are still looking reasonable. The liquidity position in the sector has always been fairly sound. Now, some of us have issues about whether or not we've got too much liquidity, you know, and whether or not that cash is actually being used efficiently and effectively into capital programs. But you stand back and you say, well, you know, your liquidity ratios are good, your current ratios are good, you know, your asset renewal ratios are pretty sound, and your debt levels are always low in local government. So that's a generic view across the sector.
Right.
Now, having said that, each council is different. And, you know, I've been written to a couple of times in the last year by the minister asking me to look very closely at the financial sustainability of specific councils, mainly off the back of reports by monitors who have gone in there and had a look at the much more granular level information below the financial report. So ostensibly you stand back and look at the general purpose financial statements, everything looks good, but that's a historic backward looking view. I think the monitors and more generally, we're more concerned about, well, what does the future look like, you know, and how sustainable, you know, are my current income and expenditure policies.
So
that's my caution. Yes, on the surface, it looks good, but the devil is always in the detail. So to that end, you know, I'll give you an example, you know, when we looked at, and we talk about it in the report, the capital programs are serially underspent across the sector. So that's not every council, but generally, you know, about $3.8 billion, I think, over the last 5 years of underspend in planned capital works. Now, you know, if those planned capital works were absolutely required and necessary, then we're $3.8 billion behind the eight ball, which means, you know, if we'd spent that money, we'd have $3.8 billion less cash. We'd have maybe $3.8 billion more debt, right? So there's this lag in capital expenditure. So that's something that I minded, even if this is my last year, to actually have a quick look at, you know. Obviously, there's this, you know, this long-term financial plan now that's required for councils, this 10-year forward-looking plan. So I'm off the back of what we found in terms of the capital program and based on the representations from the minister, I'm minded now to have a look at how well councils do this medium and long-term financial planning. So to understand whether or not they look like they're sustainable into the future.
Right. So that's a process that you will be running over the next few months before your term expires.
Yeah, look, I you know, the sector's probably aware that I produce an annual plan each year of all the audits that I propose to undertake in the next financial year. And I need to consult with the agencies that I want to include in those audits, and I must consult with the Public Accounts Committee on that. So I'm in that consultation mode at the moment, but I will publish that annual plan as I'm required to under my Act before the 30th of June. And what I'm signalling now is, even though I'm in consultation mode and I haven't necessarily finalised the plan, from my perspective, it's more likely than less likely that I'll have a topic in there on financial planning in local government. That would start, you know, fairly soon.
All right. That's been very insightful. Thank you, Andrew, for sharing that with us. We'll pop a link to the report in the show notes if people would like to look a bit more deeper into those, or more deeply, I should say, into those issues. If this is your last time and your term expires in September, as it appears to be, what's next for you?
Well, you know, Well, the first thing that people ask, based on my own professional standards and requirements, my ethical requirements, what will not be next will be working in the sectors that I've been auditing for the last 7 years.
Okay.
There's generally I have 2 years to 3 years in my mind where I would not go back and work in any other state or local government agency, right, for that matter. Okay. So that gives me a great excuse to say no to any requests and to basically just enjoy a little bit of retirement for a while, Chris.
Excellent.
Then I might turn my mind. I mean, I really like the local government sector. You know, for those of you who have known me for a long time, when I came down here to Victoria in 2003, I was the director in financial audit looking after local government. So it was kind of my first exposure to local government, and I enjoyed that immensely. I love getting out into the country. So I've got a lot of time for local government, so I'd like to do some work in local government.
Excellent.
In the future, but not employed in local government, Chris. But I'm more than happy to help with things like how to close the books and all that good stuff. But
I'm sure there's a few people taking note of that and making a calendar entry for about 3 years from now to follow up and see where you're
at. 2025. We'll see how we go.
Terrific. All right. Always good to talk, Andrew. We wish you well for whatever it is you do with those next few years. I think was it hiking in the Cotswolds might have been one of those.
Certainly was. I've just come back from the Cotswolds, and the next one, I think the big challenge is the coast to coast walk in the UK, which is the Cotswolds on steroids. So I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. Good luck with all of that, and thanks as always for being generous with your time. We hope to see you around.
Yeah, good on you, Chris. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
That's Andrew Greaves, the Auditor General in Victoria, talking to us today on VLGA Connect.